Welcome to Black Mass Appeal, a podcast that brings modern Satanism to the masses. Today on Black Mass Appeal, we're being ourselves. Also, Satanic Bay Area is going to talk things out, and in the news, the Beehive State is abuzz with trouble. With me, as always, I've got Daniel.
Hey, my name is Daniel. I'm an organizer for Satanic Bay Area, and I'm a member of the Satanic Temple. And, you know, I was going to be an individual, but everyone else was doing it. Seemed like kind of a fad, to be honest.
And a little later on, we'll have Sitlali, host of the podcast, Satanists Are People Too. But until then, it's just me, Tabitha. I'm an administrator for Satanic Bay Area. And I would be an individual, but I am my own grandpa, so...
I can't.
You're an individual serving.
You think so?
Yeah.
Oh, thanks. Black Mass Appeal is a product of Satanic Bay Area and is not associated with any other satanic groups. This is a podcast for Satanists to discuss modern Satanism, its history, left-leaning political activism, and how Satanism relates to current events and pop culture. Or for people who want to learn a little bit more about modern Satanism, whether you're a newbie or already involved in satanic groups.
Yes, speaking of satanic groups, Satanic Bay Area has a brand new salon coming up in a little less than 2 weeks after this episode is released. Tabitha, for folks who don't know what a satanic salon is, how would you describe it?
It's like a structured conversation, but a conversation like you, it's like a topicked conversation. Is that a okay way to describe it?
Yeah. It's actually kind of like doing this show, except with a lot more people.
Mm-hmm.
And this was an idea that our BMA co-host at large, Simone, stumbled on a few years ago when she realized we have social occasions where people can hang out and talk about whatever they want, and we have ritual occasions that are a little bit more formal, but we don't have anything where people can socialize in a structured academic way about more serious ideas. And we haven't done one of these since, we were doing them for a while, and then the pandemic happened, and things got all weird, and now it is time for the idea to come back.
Yeah, I'm really excited. It was a lot of fun doing them in the past, and I can't wait to get back into it.
And this one is being hosted by our constant BMA collaborator, Bridget. This means that if you are going to be in the San Francisco Bay Area on March 15th, drop us a line and maybe you'll get an invite. I say maybe because whereas most of our events are open to the general public, including people we've never met before, because Bridget is hosting this one out of her home, we're being a little bit more selective. Not everywhere. We're going to be a little bit exclusive in this one. So if you get in, good news, it means you're part of the hallowed inner circle, or as it happens to be, an inner triangle.
But don't worry, there'll be plenty more events.
Yes, absolutely. In fact, we're having a Satanic Dark Arts and Crafter Noon just a little bit after this one. And that one will be open to more folks, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So keep your ears out for updates on all of those. And speaking of updates.
Nice.
We got something new from the listeners, don't we?
Yes. Well done.
Thank you.
We have a review from Mr. XYZ titled Satanic Discourse at its Finest. Lively dialogue with a witty punk goth raconteur. Daniel's masterful and prestigious memory yield impeccably nuanced arguments, while Tabitha's wit and insight bring brilliance and levity. Indispensable for those captivated by satanic philosophy. Hoo-wee! Thanks for all those fucking like $10 words, Mr. XYZ. I'm putting that in my pocket.
That was a humdinger. I like it.
Yeah, me too. Do you hear me? Brilliance? Hmm?
You are? Yeah, no, I agree.
Anyway, thank you very much. That was very sweet.
You are very levitous.
Yeah.
I'm just letting you know.
Thanks. There's also Patreon backers.
Woo!
Woo. First up, we got Black Masochist Nicholas and Madam Pancake. And in the mini Mark of the Beast Club, which are folks who are paying $3.33, we have SunBob666. And in the Mark of the Beast Club, which are folks who are paying $6.66 on brand, we have Victor Satanas. Ooh, thank you, everybody.
Good name. Of course, they're all good names, especially when they're on this list.
Yes, I'm also a big fan of Madam Pancake, which I'm pretty sure I've seen before.
Madam Pancake left a review previously.
Oh, okay.
As did Sunbob, I believe.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that one does sound familiar as well. Well, hi, guys. Thanks.
Thanks very much to all of our Patreon backers. You make this show possible. Thanks also to everybody who left a review. If you haven't left a review yet, this is a great time. Head over to Podchaser or Apple Podcasts are the best place for us to find them. I'm always finding reviews on new services that I never even knew were there. Those review aggregate sites that scrape up ones that I've never seen before. But if you definitely want us to make sure that we get those, that's where to find it. You can also email us at blackbasspeelpod@gmail.com if you, for some reason, don't want to leave your review publicly, but still want to know what you think. And if you've never joined the Patreon before, this is a great time to do it. The Black Masochist level starts at just $1, and there is lots of bonus content on there. I promise I will get back to uploading the bonus content soon. It does take some time, but you know what? You folks are worth it, so we'll be doing it.
Well put, Daniel.
I try. I do my best. Of course, it doesn't have your levity.
Speaking of levity, you want to do the news?
The news will not have levity, I'm afraid to say.
I kind of figured, yeah.
Don't worry, folks. It's going to be... I mean, we'll have a great discussion about it, and we'll have an even better one coming up in the main topic. But, you know, sometimes... There was a weird news story. Maybe it'll make the cut next time. We'll see.
Okay.
I've told people before, I've got a Google News alert for the word Satan. You would not believe, well, you would believe the crap that comes in. Anyway, not important. We'll be right back. Again, it almost, every time I get the rhythm going, it strays into Wayne's World territory. Although this one is kind of, this story does involve a flashback, unfortunately.
Yes, yeah, cast your mind back. This is called Utah Couple is Being Harassed Over Old Satanic Abuse Claims from Peyton Harkins and Jessica Schreifels. From the Salt Lake Tribune. Joe and Lee Benyon were among more than 140 people whose names appeared in 2012 in unverified witness statements that described ritualistic sex abuse, murder, and cannibalism. The statements were part of a case that was closed without any convictions, but the document was recirculated publicly in 2022. The Benyons and others were clearly falsely accused in their statements, their attorney, Caleb Proux, argues. Yet they have endured harassment, death threats, and vandalism, Proux said, as Florida podcaster Jamin Darcy has said, they are facing annihilation. The Benyons are asking Utah Attorney General Derek Brown for a declination letter, which would declare prosecutors have declined to file charges against the Benyons. In January, a fourth district judge ordered a permanent stalking injunction against Darcy. In a statement to the Salt Lake Tribune, Darcy describes his efforts as investigative journalism, said he will appeal the judge's ruling, and denied stalking. The Main Street Pottery Shop, owned by Joe and Lee Benyon in Spring City, has been repeatedly vandalized, according to their attorney. Other people have led campaigns to remove Joe Benyon's membership in The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, Proux wrote. A mere cursory review of the allegations and a resort to common sense leads to the inescapable conclusion that the allegations simply could not have happened, Proux said. Proux. In 2022, the Utah County Sheriff's Office made a startling announcement that it was investigating a ritualistic sex abuse ring. The Benyons were among the people also named in those documents. Proux reasoned it is time for the office to release a declination letter, in part because the reopened investigation has garnered charges against just two people, former therapist Hamblin and his ex-wife, Roselle Stevenson. A judge has said he will dismiss some charges against Hamblin. Stevenson's charges remain pending. This has put the Bennions in a prolonged, surreal state where they know that they are being falsely accused of heinous, nearly inconceivable crimes, but are also apparently in peril of criminal charges, which no police officer has ever asked them about. Oh, that's really scary.
So, if people listening to this story here, this is not the full article. As always, we encourage people to check out the full story if they want to know more. But if you're confused, you're like, cannibalistic child sex ring in 2012 and 2020 and 2022? Isn't that weird? Yes. Yes, it is. Context that is missing from this story is that these are old allegations that go back. These are satanic. This is a satanic panic case from the 80s or 90s. I can't remember which was buried at the time because it turned out there was nothing to it. And then decades later, some assholes dug it up when they noticed, hey, did you notice that this, county attorney, they said, state attorney? I can't remember. They noticed that the sitting politician's name, what was named in this SRA scandal very many years ago. And, you know, these crazy assholes at the sheriff's departments went and made a thing about it, either as part of a political stunt or because they're actually dumb enough to believe it. Who's to say? So that's what's going on there. I haven't looked at this case. I have no idea either the original charges or the new ones that the new investigation, quote unquote, that has popped up. So I can't say for sure, how sound it is. But the lawyer's statement here that it's a series of charges that just seem like they couldn't possibly have happened. Well, we've been down this road before, haven't we?
Well, and that's what's scary about it, too, because it's not like logic really plays into the SRA stuff, right? So, like, how the slope is rather slippery right now is all I'm trying to say.
Now, the only other thing I'll say about this story is this fella here, this Jamin Darcy, this Florida podcaster who says that he's doing investigative journalism and just asking questions. You ever heard of this guy? I've never heard of this guy.
No. He sounds like a weekday morning, goofy host of talk hour or whatever.
Well, here's all I'm going to say about it. There is absolutely no evidence that Florida podcaster Jamin Darcy masturbates into an empty mayonnaise jar and then freezes it in his freezer and then looks at the frozen remains to get sexual gratification. They call it a Siberian milkshake, except they don't, because there's no reason to think that he's done that. If we had any reason to believe that Florida podcaster Jamin Darcy masturbates into clear glass vessels, freezes them, and obsessively collects them in his freezer in order to engage in a form of gratification the rest of us dare not even ponder, I would present it here so that we could clear the air and that these sorts of vile and slanderous rumors would no longer plague Jamin Darcy, Florida podcaster, who, once again, we have no particular reason to believe masturbates into transparent vessels and then preserves them through the miraculous freezer technology of the Frigidaire Corporation. And, you know, so that you can look back and fantasize about that moment after the fact, having preserved it in this way. Why are people saying this? After all of these years, we thought those charges had been finally put to bed, or in this case, put to fridge,
and Daniel, yet we're some still people,
talking about it. Why? Why are we still talking about this?
Some people are driving while they're listening to this, and they can't pause it, or if they start laughing or something, you're gonna crash a car with this.
Should we put a warning on the front?
We probably should.
Okay, but I would like Florida podcaster Jamin Darcy to know that I, for one, am not trucking with these rumors in any way. if anyone out there has any profound and solid evidence, if you've looked at his freezer and you've seen it for yourself, contact us at blackbassappealpod@gmail.com. Otherwise, this should be the last anybody hears about what's going on in Jem and Darcy's freezer, probably as we speak, except not because he doesn't do it.
Jem and Darcy jamming in the morning.
We might be mispronouncing that. I have no idea.
Yeah, that was probably actually really rude of me. So sorry, Jamie.
Oh, well, yeah. I don't know. Well, we cleared his name. So
that's true.
It's the least we can do.
I think we ended up probably on the neutral.
Yes. Anything else to say about this story?
No. I think we should go. I feel kind of gross after that, actually.
We're going to do a quick shower and we'll be back with the main topic. You know, if you play, you know, that's the guitar riff that opens this show every episode. Uh-huh. If you play it backwards, it explains to you how Jem and Darcy definitely does not collect empty Gerber baby food.
Daniel.
Jars. Okay. Well, I'm just saying, listen to it yourself.
As they say in Life of Brian, yes, we are all individuals.
Yes, we're all individuals!
But what does that mean for our satanic perspective? We're joined by Sitlali, host of Satanists Are People Too. Thanks for joining us, Sitlali!
Thank you so much for having me. My pronouns are she, her, and I just started my Satanists Are People Too podcast, and I will be willing to give more background information if y'all want to, as well as to why I started it.
What can you tell us about Satanists Are People Too? First of all, great title.
Thank you. Just a quick background of me. I was with TST for about 5 years. Last year, there was kind of a little scuffle. I'll leave it as to what the scuffle was, and I was essentially fired. Trying to find myself or trying to find something to do, I was like, hey, there's not a lot of satanic oriented podcasts, and I would be really interested to have hosts, or not to have hosts, but to have people and share their perspective of what Satanism looks like to them. Because as Satanists, we just kind of have our own individual practice, right? My practice doesn't look the same as someone else. That came about, I started recording, I think, in November, and it is still going. It's available on Spotify and also Substack right now. I think one of the most interesting things has been where they got their satanic practice from. And usually how I start my show is like, why are you a Satanist in the first place? It's not to like, how and why are you doing it? But it's more like, why are we here? Because we're clearly both Satanists. How did this journey lead you into Satanism? And what are you doing now? Because a lot of the people that I've interviewed have also left the big org. So we're just kind of trying to find ourselves. Some people got involved in another community, or some people got, you know, solo practitioners. Me, myself, I'm trying to organize a group here in North Texas, kind of hanging out for now and building that community. So yeah, it's been great. I've loved talking to people, and I've gotten a lot of good feedback. There was an episode that I did with a guest named Richard Proctor. We just kind of went off and like built, like he talked about some aspects of Irish culture, and I talked about some aspects of Mexican culture, and we found some parallels, which I never thought would happen. But you know, I took the time to sit down and to listen to him, and he also listened to me, and I just love recording. Like, that's the point of recording. It's the point is to record satanic history, just kind of like how y'all are doing as well.
Well, that sounds thrilling. I hope if our listeners haven't checked you out yet, that they take the opportunity to, after they've listened to this episode of our show, of course. And on the note of Satanist being people, we are here today to talk about individualism. I've developed kind of a bone to pick about this because I ask people, what does individualism mean? And I discover that it can be very difficult to provide a definition. Granted, I am putting folks on the spot, so that's on me. Everyone, I think, intuitively understands that individualism is personal and that it emphasizes our personhood. But beyond that, it can be kind of hard to say. And well, I've got opinions on the topic and we'll get into them as we get into the reading. But Tabitha, what do you think? First of all, do you think that Satanism is individualistic? And if somebody were to ask you, what does that mean to you? What would you say?
I think that it is it's funny because the part of Satanism that I really like is actually the community-based parts of it. But then again, in saying that, like, as Sitlali was saying, that everyone's Satanism is different. So, you know, if you want to kind of paint individualism as something like that, as like, you know, you're making up your own rules and you're doing, you know, what feels good to you, then yeah, I think it is individualistic. And also that also answers your other question at the same time. Ha ha!
You got me there.
Yeah, kind of ditto to what Tabitha just said. I think it boils down to, what do you want to do? What does your practice look like? And then from there, we kind of look for a community, because the point is to not, I think a lot of us got away from insert main religion here, right? Like whatever religion, because I've met a lot of Satanists that I have met a lot of Satanists that have left a wide variety of religions, not just Christianity, and a lot of their practice kind of mirrors what they left. Just to kind of speak a little bit on people of color and Satanism a tad bit, is what it looks like to us is that when we decide to leave a religion, we kind of leave a community behind. So it's a very tough decision to make when we leave a certain religion, right? So to me, I think it's always important to put yourself first and then look for those like-minded people, because I've gone through this several times, I think, is that you find a community, you think the community has your back, and they do, but then people start to show themselves, and your morals don't align with their morals, if that makes sense. And we want to try to get away from that groupthink, right? I think a lot of us got turned away from that groupthink of some religious groups, and we can get very quickly tied up into it again. So I think it's both. But in terms of importance, I would definitely put the individual and the individual practices first.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I personally, I have maybe some hangups about this word. I have in the past couple of years stopped using individualist and started using the word selfhood for how I think of satanic practice and philosophy, because I think the word individualism has some baggage, both social and political, in America that gets real weird. And I would personally just like to steer clear of that. If other people still like the word and it's useful for them, that is fine. I am certainly not begrudging them that. I also think that as Satanists, more or less we inherited this term from old Anton LaVey, who I think employed it in the idea that Satanism should be individualistic, because I think he perceived mainstream religion as more collectivist. And so I'll often hear people tell me Satan represents the self and the individual. And I think, well, why does he? What's our rationale behind that? Didn't Satan lead a mass movement, 1/3 of all of the angels? That's what I kept hearing from the preachers. So is that necessarily a good fit? And you know, the answer to that is personally complicated, and we'll get into it as we go ahead. And also, I just think that it's sort of a vague term, the way it's employed oftentimes in casual conversation. It's a warm reading term, as I started to employ it. It's like saying Satanism is fair-minded. Well, who's ever going to say they're not fair-minded? Of course we're going to say that. Of course we're going to say we're individualists, because that's a word that has positive connotations in our society and culture. People are scared off if you say otherwise. But what does it really mean?
We should make the difference between individualistic and isolationist. Because when I think of individual practice, I don't think about like, I'm going to do this and only I'm allowed to do this, right? In my former congregation that I led, because I was leadership, here in DFW. We had a member that she was a minister as well. So she was able to create some rituals for herself. And one ritual that she created was a Juneteenth ritual, which if I ever have permission to share that, it was fucking badass. So to kind of describe it is she took a verse from the Bible that used to justify slavery. And she took that passage, put it in a goblet, spit in the goblet, and also set it on fire. To her, that spoke volumes just doing that, rejecting how Christianity used to back up slavery. So those are the aspects that I love in terms of community. Would I do a Juneteenth ritual? Absolutely not. Because I don't feel like it's my place to do so. However, in the community, I'm going to go ahead and encourage people that think that applies to them or they know that applies to them. I would 100% back them up and be like, do this. If you feel empowered doing so, go ahead and do it.
I have to know, do you remember which passage it was?
Something along the lines of, you need to serve your master. Or something like that. I know that's super vague, but that's all I can remember from it.
I think I know the verse based on what you said there, but we can follow up later. Well, I'll tell you what. Does anybody mind if I start the reading?
Nope.
I think you should.
Okay, then. So in terms of the question, what does individualism mean? And to help us break that down, we're reading from the paper On Moral Philosophy of Individualism, by Mark McCombs from the University of Northern Iowa in 1991. Individualism refers to a social theory or ideology assigning a higher moral value to the individual than to the community or society. It consequently advocates leaving individuals free to act as they think most conducive to their self-interest. Society, then, may be defined as an aggregate of autonomous but interacting individuals. I'm going to pause there to interject. This is the thing that has always confused me about this term, is they say, well, individualism emphasizes the individual, not the society. But is it the society composed of individuals? What then is the distinction being made about my necessities versus their necessities, except scale? Confusing, but this will be explained as we go on. Quote, this leads to the idea of the public good, defined by Rousseau as the collected good of all separate individuals. The concept of individualism often carries with it negative connotations associated with selfishness and egotism, and its principles are seen by many to be in opposition to social stability. However, individualism does not necessarily result in extreme selfishness, nor does it always promote competition. One can argue, in fact, that individualism is as much a description of social reality as it is a morality directing the behavior of individuals. These ideas developed in response to feudal societies. Medieval society did not recognize the autonomous individual or an individual's rights. As Europe progressed out of feudalism, the reconstruction of political authority freed people from the anonymity and insecurities of feudal society, providing the circumstances for a birth of individualism. As a philosophy, full-fledged individualism seems to have emerged first in England. Because England was a relatively less rigid society than the rest of Europe, I'm going to pause to let the horrifying implications of that statement just sink in for all of us. Three, four, okay, we're back. Because England was a relatively less rigid society, it was a state in which it was easier for individuals to assert their demands. So I'm going to pause right there because I guess that's our first major distinction that maybe needs to be discussed, which is, I asked the question, I'm like, in what way are we distinguishing the individual person from multiple other individuals? And the answer to that seems to be a historical one, because we find out that in, say, the way most states were structured for most of what we would call history, the people in charge were not in charge as individuals, they were in charge as institutions. The individual here is being contrasted against the crown and the state and the church and the couple of thousand people who were in charge, not because they were the right people, but because they represent this system that is inhuman and above you. Why is the king the king? And well, in reality, it's because his ancestors killed the right people and because his, you know, immediate forebears were smart politicians. But that's obviously not the answer you're supposed to give. Is it because he's the best person for the job? Well, you'd like to think so, but history tells us not necessarily always, including, I think, in the case of the English king right now. The real answer to that was always supposed to be because God says so. Being king is not about, the king is not an individual, the king is God's representative. And so we down here in the common masses may be individuals, but what does that matter? You know, the things that matter are above us and not a part of us and do not reflect that. So that is, I guess, a valuable contrast, certainly, to the way I would guess most of us think of ourselves today.
You know, maybe I didn't have a good definition of what individualism is, if we are taking this as the definition.
What we'll see is that there's not just one definition, but this is okay. A useful one.
Yeah.
For the reasons I just discussed. Why it's not necessarily useful for our discussion here, though, and why we may need to build on this is because you say, If you say I'm an individualist in the sense that I do not believe that our individual rights and political wills should be crushed by an absolute monarchy, great. But that's not a very profound statement in this day and age. Even the people who are at the heads of authoritarian states who are crushing the individual populace rarely say that that's what they're doing. It's an important distinction in terms of the last couple of thousand years, but not important in contemporary terms. At least I don't think so.
No, although I do have a question as to why England seemed to be less, quote, rigid society. Could it have been that one king, was it King Henry VIII, that kind of established his own religion?
The Church of England? Yes.
Yep. So could it have been that? Because then I'm thinking, the other thing that kind of strikes me from this passage that you just read was that it's shameful to think about yourself, right? Because I grew up in the Catholic Church, and anything that you practice, like yoga, for example, that was seen as sinful because you focused on yourself, which I thought was silly. So I don't know. I think that's where the negative connotation for individualism comes from, is because historically thinking about just yourself was selfish. Versus now, of course, and we definitely saw that with Anton LaVey, who was going against that grain. He was like, no, you know what? Fuck everyone else. I'm going to do what I want, right? And so I think a lot of us Satanists kind of took that to heart. But we're more empathetic about the causes around us. I don't think I've met a lot of Satanists. I mean, I'm sure they exist, but I haven't met a lot of Satanists that are just like, fuck everyone else, only worry about me, right?
Let's see what McCombs has to add here. Quote, the precise term individualism arose out of the European reaction to the French Revolution and its apparent source, the thoughts of the Enlightenment. The Enlightenment was characterized by a new spirit of inquiry, discovery, and individual self-confidence and assertiveness. The changes in attitude allowed for the onset of individualism, yet at the time of the Revolution, conservative thought condemned the interest and rights of the individual. Oh, isn't that interesting? Since individuals pass out of existence, conservative argues that society requires that the inclinations of its members should be frequently thwarted, their will controlled, and their passions brought into subjection. The French Revolution was thought to be proof that the ideas of the individual imperiled the stability of the Commonwealth. Scottish economist Adam Smith proposed that individuals pursuing their own self-interest would be a part of a natural system which would ultimately help society. Smith advocated government non-interference in the economy. British statesman and philosopher Edmund Burke built upon these ideas when he recognized the system explained by Smith as a natural one. Capitalism was seen as a simple and obvious system for mutual advantage. Burke equated the laws of commerce with the laws of nature, and thus, by extension, the laws of God. Ooh, okay. Hobbes argued that people were like atoms, separate and individual, acting in their own self-interest in response to and as a part of a larger whole. He envisioned a society which individuals acting in their separate interest would form a harmony whose interests were considered together. Hobbes was advocating a political structure that would facilitate individualism within society. Locke argued that the rights of life, liberty, and property were natural rights for all people, and these rights came before any idea of an organized society. Thus, society's role in respect to these rights was to protect them. The views of Locke was powerful support for the establishment of industrial capitalism, in which freedom from government restraint was vital. Whoa, that went to some wild fucking places there, didn't it?
Right. Well, and like, here we are, friend. we did it, and we're not doing too good, bud.
I do remember Locke from, like, the natural... I do remember all that, because my undergrad is in political science. So this is slowly coming back to me. And the other silly thing that comes to mind is the comic Calvin and Hobbes, too. About this. I know it's kind of out there, but yeah, it makes sense now that they were kind of trying to discourage individual thinking, because what does individual thinking do? It realizes that, oh, this kind of sucks. We need to kind of gather and do something about it.
You know, that's actually not a silly reference at all. Hobbes in that comic is named after Thomas Hobbes, and Hobbes, right. When he Read Leviathan, is arguing that society is necessary because without it, life is brutish, nasty, and short. And Hobbes, as you recall, didn't think much of human beings. Hobbes, the character in the comic, didn't think much of human beings. Calvin, also named after John Calvin there, perhaps ironically, I assume. So, no, actually, great observation. I think that this capitalist perspective seems very weird to us, but makes a little bit more sense, again, historically, if the kind of ruthless tyrannical authority that we've seen almost exclusively up to this point in history has been overbearing monarchies, all-powerful states, and the will of these multinational churches just bulldozing over everything. Compared to that, the idea that, no, people should just be free to establish businesses and trade and not necessarily have to deal with appeasing the crown and the church in that way, does make a little bit more sense. It does feel a little bit more attractive. And of course, Locke and Hobbes and Smith do not have the advantage of our several centuries of additional perspective. So there is that.
Yeah, I was about to say that these were really good observations, but you know, we've kind of seen things go one way or the other, honestly. But now, like you said, we have that perspective, right? Hindsight is 2020, and I think we're all trying to do the best we can with what we have, especially now.
I could go back. I mean, I don't like where we are right now.
Kind of living in our own communes and doing our own things in small communities. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. All right. This is from On Liberty, from John Stuart Mill in 1859. Protection against the magistrate is not enough. There needs to be protection also against the tyranny of the prevailing opinion and feeling, against the tendency of society to impose, by any other than civil penalties, its own ideas and practices as rules of conduct on those who dissent from them. But reflecting persons perceived that when society is itself the tyrant, society collectively, its means of tyrannizing are not restricted to the acts which it may do by the hands of its political functionaries. It practices a social tyranny more formidable than many kinds of political oppression. Protection, therefore, against the tyranny of the magistrate is not enough. There needs protection also against the tyranny of the prevailing opinion and feeling, against the tendency of society to impose its own ideas and practices as rules of conduct on those who dissent from them. There is a limit to the legitimate interference of collected opinion with individual independence. But though this position is not likely to be contested in general terms, the practical question, where to place the limit, how to make the fitting adjustment between individual independence and social control, is a subject on which nearly everything remains to be done. All that makes existence valuable to anyone depends on the enforcement of restraints upon the actions of other people. Some rules of conduct, therefore, must be imposed. What these rules should be is the principal question in human affairs. But if we expect a few of the most obvious cases, it is one of those which least progress has been made in resolving. People are accustomed to believe that their feelings on subjects of this nature are better than reasons, and render reasons unnecessary. The practical practice which guides them to their opinions on the regulation of human conduct is the feeling in each person's mind that everybody should be required to act as he and those with whom he sympathizes would like them to act. No one acknowledges to himself that his standard of judgment is his own liking. Wherever there is an ascendant class, a large portion of the morality of the country emanates from its class interests and its feelings of class superiority. The morality between Spartans and Helots, I'm assuming that's Helots, between planters and Negroes, between princes and subjects, between men and women, has been, for the most part, the creation of these class interests and feelings. Also, I was very uncomfortable saying Negroes.
So I don't know about anybody else, but I read this and I think, okay, Mill gets it. Everything we were just talking about a second ago, Mill gets it. Because he's like, yeah, okay, we're on the same page about the tyranny of government, but what about the tyranny of your boss? What about the tyranny of your bank? What about the tyranny of your homeowners association? What about the tyranny of the snooty people who are the influencers in your neighborhood or your industry or your class? What about them? This is where he starts to break apart this idea. You know, individualism is not just threatened by one thing. Individualism is threatened from all sides.
So I think that puts into question, even if we did get tyranny out of the government, is it going to kind of form again in smaller communities?
Yeah, is it like a vacuum sort of thing? Like tyranny can't exist in a vacuum or whatever? Like if we get rid of one, there's just going to be another right behind it?
Yeah, because that, I mean, going back to like political philosophy and political theory, that kind of is the case. So then how do we get people from not doing that, I guess is the question. I have many questions about this. So I guess that's my question, is how do we not do that?
Well, that's the second part of Mill's argument here, where he says, obviously we must have rules. There has to be some rules that keep us from trampling each other. But at the same time, those rules can't constrain us to the point that they're worse than the abuses they're protecting from. But as he points out here, so pretty much most people get that far. But as he points out here, what then should those rules and limits be? And what are the reasons behind them? Fuck, we don't know. We've never known. We actually haven't bothered to answer that question pretty much ever. It's what he is proposing here. And I would say he's right. And I don't think we've actually gotten much better at it since in the, 150 years since this was written.
He definitely picked up on that pattern. So I guess it it just boils down to the question of how do we do it, and it can it be done?
I will also say, as a Satanist, I intensely identify with this sentiment here, where it says, again, this conflict between the necessity of some kind of restraint versus our seeming inability to articulate what that should be. I feel like this pops up over and over again in our Satanist religions and institutions. You know, it's easy to walk in and say, oh, we're Satanists. It's all about personal freedom. We don't need rules. And, you know, then you spend about a week interacting with real Satanists and you go, okay, actually, never mind. Turns out maybe we do need maybe a couple. But again, that's kind of as far as it gets. Nobody seems to know what kind of lines there should be, much less where to put them.
No, I was about to say, and I'm speaking from experience in leadership within a satanic community, is that I'm gonna be one of those people that seems like the bad person, but I firmly believe there should be some sort of rules or guidance at the very minimum.
Yeah, like structure.
Communities. Yes, structure for sure, which, and a lot of my friends, they want to live in this like communist commune, which I'm for. I'm down for them. But if I were invited to that, I would be like, no thanks. Why? Because at the end of the day, I think it boils down to that individual need. You need something different, right? We all need food. We all need shelter, etc. But at the end of the day, we also have like societal, emotional needs that may be different and may not be met in that same community, if that makes sense. So, and I laughed when you mentioned that, because I don't think I've run into a space that doesn't have any rules, because I think you have to have rules. Otherwise, people that have bad intentions start to make their way into that community.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the last thing you want. Like, I don't want fucking fascists in my circle. Of course, there's like, you know, some black metal bands that are clearly satanic but are fucking Nazis, which does not make sense to me. So I think there should at least be some guidelines, at least to protect the people that are within that community. And it's not like, you need to, you know, give 10% of your earnings to this community. It's more like, don't be a fucking racist. Don't hate on people. Don't harass people. Just things like that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, don't be a fucking piece of shit. God damn it.
Exactly. But then.
Or whomever, damn it.
But then you need to clarify on what does a piece of shit look like, right?
So, Lali, do you want to take a history of happiness for us?
And just a quick correction here, Carl Sadelstrom.
Your guess is as good as mine, unfortunately.
Yeah, okay. We are known far and wide on this podcast to not say anyone's name right, so go Perfect. For it.
Okay, because I didn't want to be that person that's like, why aren't you cultured enough or something like that? Okay, so, all right. From A History of Happiness, Carl Sadelstrom and Sean Illing, Vox, 2018. Aristotle was one of the first to offer what you might call a philosophy of happiness. For him, happiness consisted of being a good person, of living virtuously, and not being a slave to one's lowest impulses. Happiness was a goal, something at which humans constantly aim, but never quite reach. Epicurus believed that happiness was found in the pursuit of simple pleasures. The rise of Christianity upended Greek notions of happiness, and suddenly the good life was all about sacrifice. True happiness was now something to be attained in the afterlife. The Enlightenment and the rise of the market capitalism transformed Western culture yet again. Individualism became the dominant ethos, with self-fulfillment and personal authenticity the highest goods. Although Freud didn't think human beings were especially designed for happiness, there were other figures who emerged from that movement. People like the Austrian psychoanalyst William Reich, who popularized this idea that happiness was connected to free love and free sexuality. These ideas got picked up by the early Bohemians and later countercultural movement. Happiness became increasingly about liberation and pursuing an authentic life. So happiness is seen as a uniquely individualistic pursuit. It is all about freedom. By the end of the 60s, there's a feeling that society is not allowing people to be authentic, that corporations are the enemy. People are thirsting for solidarity, and they see corporate life as dead and two-dimensional. But what happens as you move through the 70s and into the 80s is the advertising industry effectively co-opted these counter-cultural trends. At the same time, Reagan and Thatcher were advancing a notion of happiness and consumerism. The idea of happiness we now have, this pursuit of authenticity and personal freedom, may have once been a genuinely noble goal. But over time, these values have been co-opted and transformed and used to normalize a deeply unjust and undesirable situation. There really is no way to accurately compare happiness today with happiness 50 or 100 years ago. We've looked at ideas of collective happiness as ugly or creepy or totalitarian, but they need not be. I believe we desperately need to reimagine what collective happiness might look like.
So here we encounter, I think, the idea of individualism that probably is closest to how most of us are using the word. Less a concern about how society is structured and more just how we're living personally. Like, yeah, do what you want, wear what you want, marry who you want, your, you know, needs and authenticity, as we hear here, should be a priority, probably the highest priority. That, I think, is this idea that we've inherited from the sort of 20th century movements here. Does that sound right to us?
I mean, fuck yeah.
I would say so, yeah. I think Reagan, yet again, advancing that notion of happiness and consumerism, which I did not expect that.
Well, that's the other half of this argument, is that this idea of this argument that, hey, maybe individualism was a good idea, but now corporate America has fucked it up for everybody and we need to rethink these things.
Well, yeah, yeah. You know, the best way to, you know, stamp out the counterculture is to adopt it and sell it back to people. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I didn't think of it, but, you know, we've had these cycles of individualism just kind of being like, nope, that's not good. And then over time, people just kind of submit to it, either by force or otherwise. And it yet reappears again, you know? And that's usually how things happen in cycles, whether we intend for them to be like that or not.
I think it's a lot easier to find happiness when you're with other people and like in a community. And that is coming from someone who's extremely introverted, by the way.
Agreed. Because I think this makes me think of the time where we all had to isolate ourselves, right? During the panini mm-hmm. in 2020. And I think about how I'm very much a homebody as well. And I'm definitely not an extrovert. I'm an extrovert only because I need to.
Same.
In certain aspects of my life. So literally I get paid to be an extrovert. And then when I get home, I'm like, I do not want to talk to anyone. So what this strikes me as is that I agree that I think we need to be, it's just how we work, I think, and just how we're wired, that we need to live with other people or socialize with other people to kind of share ideas as well. But I think we need to be very established and kind of explore what makes us happy. It's that pursuit of happiness, right? It just boils down to the self, but other people are themselves too, right? Individualism versus isolationism. I think a lot of people tend to think that they're the same, but that doesn't necessarily have to be the case.
To this reading, I would add two other things really quickly. One, every time Epicurus comes up, I have to reference it. People can go back to episode 144 in our archive, The Satanic Warlock, possibly the funniest episode we've ever done, to hear more about, there's always these dudes, and it's always a dude who's like, I'm an Epicurean. He's like, yeah, I'm an Epicurean Satanist to love the pleasures of life. And there's always a way to try to pick up on somebody. Epicurus was celibate. He didn't like sex. No, that's not true. He thought sex was like nice, but he didn't trust it. He thought it made you stupid and that it and that it was just bad for people's interactions. And so that is why he is emphasizing these other pleasures of life to substitute for it. So if you're an Epicurean, fine, but I don't think most of you are, actually. I think even people who are legitimately asexual are not asexual because they're Epicureans. They're asexual because they're asexual. So maybe pluck that word out of your vocabulary, and also lots of other ones. Again, go back to The Satanic Warlock for more on that. Also, I find this closing very interesting, this idea that we've been conditioned to mistrust the idea of group happiness. I'm not necessarily sure that's true. I think that is contextual. For example, I think in most of the religions that are popular in America, we see these sorts of mass expressions of euphoria, everybody in church clapping and singing together, everybody getting the Holy Spirit in them. Or even if you are a member of a more staid and dignified denomination that has a more grave attitude about their religious gatherings, there's still the idea that you are experiencing something transcendent, all of you there together. I guess you could be transcendent if you were the only one in church, but the priest might start to feel like he's a little underappreciated if nobody else shows up. So
I like to think for myself, that's true. Where it starts to get a little problematic for me is when the group starts to, that hive mind, that groupthink, and you can't question them. And I think a healthy community has to have active discourse, has to have an exchange of ideas. Of course, there's limits of like, you know, people, I'm not going to open the discussion to someone that's like, for example, they agree with ICE doing with what they're doing in communities, right? Like if they came up to me and said that, I would be like, fuck off, get out, right? Because at that point, do I have the energy to convince someone otherwise if they're already, because they're individuals, they come with their set of ideas based on their life experiences. Do I have the spoons and the energy to convince them otherwise? I think that's, and I've asked myself that question many times in leadership.
Well, I mean, that brings us right back to Mill, right? We all agree that should be a free exchange of ideas, but we also all agree some ideas we're just not going to brook. Where do we draw those lines? We don't know. I mean, we know as individuals, but it's not like we've got a rule book that we can go to and go, oh, okay, here's the problem.
Yeah, and I think that's just the struggle of life, right? We are always trying to figure out what works best for us.
Yeah, and try to drag as many people along with us that exactly. agree as possible.
Exactly. Fit as many people into that handbasket as you can, yes.
Yeah.
Tabitha, I know I'm up next, but actually I think you might appreciate this one, so maybe you want to take it.
All right, we've got, Is Christianity Individualistic or Collectivist? By Derek Rismawi of UC Irvine, 2013. People have often wondered whether Christianity was more of an individualistic religion with an emphasis on the person, or collectivistic with an emphasis on the whole race or community. At different points in history, the church has emphasized one over the other. I offer you Machen's answer first. It is true that historic Christianity is in conflict at many points with the collectivism of the present day. It does emphasize, against the claims of society, the worth of the individual soul. It provides for the individual a refuge from all the fluctuating currents of human opinion, a secret place of meditation where a man can come alone into the presence of God. It does give a man courage to stand, if need be, against the world. If a man once comes to believe in a personal God, then the worship of him will not be regarded as selfish isolation, but as the chief end of man. And now C.S. Lewis on the twin errors of totalitarianism and individualism. The idea that the whole human race is, in a sense, one thing, one huge organism like a tree, must not be confused with the idea that individual differences do not matter, or that real people are somehow less important than collective things like classes, races, and so forth. My nose and my lungs are very different, but they are only alive at all because they are parts of my body and share its common life. Christianity thinks of human individuals not as mere members of a group or items in a list, but as organs in a body, different from one another and each contributing what no other could. When you find yourself wanting to turn your children or pupils or even your neighbors into people exactly like yourself, remember that God probably never meant them to be that. A Christian must not be either a totalitarian or an individualist. I feel a strong desire to say which of these two errors is the worst. That is the devil getting at us. He always sends errors into the world in pairs, and he always encourages us to spend a lot of time thinking which is the worse. He relies on your extra dislike of the one error to draw you gradually into the opposite one. So, is Christianity a collectivist or individualistic? Machen and Lewis answer, yes. I think it's pretty funny that how easy it is to have both of these opinions in the same religion. And how far away were these from each other, like C.S. Lewis and Machen's, like, lives?
That's a great question. I can't remember. They're not...
not contemporary to each other, I'm assuming.
No, I mean, they're closer together than they are further apart. Let's put it that
way. Okay. I just think that I mean, that to me makes me feel like it is rather individualistic because they both have differing opinions and both classify themselves as deeply devoted Christians.
All I could think is that I think it's very funny that C.S. Lewis is saying you shouldn't try to make children and pupils people exactly like yourselves, because when I read his books, that appears to be exactly what he's trying to do all the time.
I was about to say, like, isn't he essentially preaching in his books a lot of the time? If you really
yeah.
Like, what else was the Screwtape Letters about, Lewis? I don't get this guy. I don't get it all. So, Lolly, what do you think? You referenced earlier, I think, that you are somebody who had an experience in a previous religious paradigm before Satanism, whereas Tabitha and I did not. So what do you think? Do you think Christianity is individualistic?
I was thinking about this a second ago. It also boils down to why there are so many branches of Christianity, because people start to have differing ideas of what the interpretation of the Bible and what Christ means to them, you know, because there's also, I mean, believe it or not, in Texas, there are some churches that are very accepting of LGBTQIA individuals versus, let's say, a Catholic church. They're not as welcoming there. And the reason why I am recording people's stories and asking them about their Satanism specifically is because I don't think any of us have the same trajectory. And what I saw in my congregation is that a lot of us had similar backgrounds, but we weren't quite it. There were some people, including my former co-congregation head, he had a background in Southern Baptism versus I didn't, right? I don't like, you know, practicing Christianity. He was pretty involved in that until he realized, hey, this isn't for me. And there's a lot more people that have, you know, a deeper hatred towards Christianity, I would say. And I am like, I don't like it. I don't like what they're doing. I don't like their politics. However, I don't have as much trauma with it, if that makes sense. And I think that's another individualistic aspect to it.
I read this and I sincerely doubt this is what the writer was going for, but similar to what you just said, Sitlali, I think my takeaway is Is Christianity individualistic? Well, if the person, if the individual Christian is an individualist, then yes. And if they're not, then no. And so seems to me like this honestly is no help at all.
Sometimes.
Yeah. That's the vibe, I guess. And here we're going to transition straight from that into What is Satanism by David Rutledge for the Australian Broadcasting Company in 2022. Quote, Anton LaVey established the Church of Satan in San Francisco in 1966. Yep, we're doing this again. LaVey was a notorious hippie baiter. He hated the burgeoning peace and love movement at least as much as he hated the Christian church, if not more. That's true. An interesting note, both for the same reason. He both felt that those were sort of collectivist enterprises, oddly enough. He was also a devout individualist who articulated a philosophy of what today we would call self-empowerment. Says Peter Gilmore, quote, when it comes to celebrating ego and self-deification, we understand that nature is hierarchical and that there are always going to be different levels of people. But in being our own gods, we can be beneficent gods, and we can deal with others in a charitable and loving way. It's not about crushing other folks, which is how people tend to interpret self-centeredness. I'll pause to note that in hearing Gilmore talk about how much he would love to crush other folks, see our previous references to his writings on this show. Ahem. This all sounds well and good, but even a quick browse through the Satanic Bible reveals an unnervingly steely kind of social Darwinism. LaVey was an admirer of arch-libertarian Ayn Rand and described Satanism as, quote, Ayn Rand's philosophy with ceremony and ritual added. A lot of people don't like that quote and they want to say he never said it, but he definitely did. It's an oft-noted irony that much of the Satanic Bible anticipates the social and economic doctrines of modern-day Republicans in the USA. LaVey was also a eugenicist and often advocated in interviews for the establishment of a police state. The Satanic Temple rejects the Church of Satan stance, according to Stephen Long, a minister of Satan. Shout out to Stephen. Hope he's doing okay. Quote, during the 1800s, the Romantic poets started to look at Lucifer as a heroic figure. The foundational belief structures of the Western world were being reconfigured, and so during that time, he started to be seen as a champion of the outsider. As a gay former Christian who underwent ex-gay conversion therapy and attempts at deliverance in his teens, Long knows what it's like to be an outsider. But his perspective on Satan as champion of minority rights also informs his understanding of Satanism as a materialist, carnal religion in interesting ways. Quote, Satanism is a religion of the body, and my concern as a Satanist goes downwards, towards the earth, Long says. Part of that means material pleasure, but I'm not some kind of libertine. I'm actually very conservative in how I live my life. As I understand it, the carnality of Satan also needs to be put in the broader context of material conditions, physical conditions, and that includes people's physical needs being met. What are the conditions that people are living under, and are those conditions just? So there we get two different perspectives on individualism from two very different Satanists. What do we think about how they compare? And then, if we're asking whether Christianity is an individualistic religion and noting that they can't seem to get on the same page, here we do see Satanists not necessarily on the same page over that word as well.
I just want to laugh at the fact that LaVey was essentially called Ayn Rand, but spooky.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
Really funny. But it's not incorrect. A lot of Satanists that I know, I would say like 70% have read the Satanic Bible, right? So I think a lot of us, that has sparked some ideas of like what Satanism should look like, but we've definitely fallen, keep in mind, you know, LaVey was in like the 60s and 70s and we're, you know, 60 years out. Of course, we're going to develop new ideas and society is going to look different from decade to decade, year to year, depending on what happens. So I think as where we start to look for that community is that, yes, we're individuals, but we start to look for people that have the same ideas. We are not following a hard set of rules as to what Satanism should look like. It still brings back that point that our Satanism looks the way it does based on what we have learned, based on what we have been exposed to, because maybe a Satanist from Texas may not have the same trajectory as a Satanist in Europe.
Well, what about, so let's look at old Anton for a second here, because on the one hand, he is correctly here identified as an individualist. And at the same time, though, so we say that Satanism is individualistic, and yet he is also making it prescriptive. Read this book, live this way. This is the standard and the definition of what Satanism is. This is what a Satanist does. This is what a Satanist believes. In what way is it individualistic if I am conforming to your expression? Similarly, his social and political views, totally bizarre. He will go on an awful lot about these kind of, you know, hierarchies of control. He wanted certain people concentrated in space ghettos. He wanted the government to outlaw abortion, but he also wanted it to sterilize people who were deemed unfit. In what way is this individualism? I guess his answer might be, it's individualism for me because it's what I want. Well, okay, that is consistent as far as it goes, but how far does it go? I've never been able to make sense out of any of this, to be completely honest.
I just want to bring up, though, that it's an interesting article, but Anton LaVey thought he was like the king of Satanism, right? Like, he thought he knew everything about it. He came up with it. It's his baby, blah, 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 blah. Whereas, like, Stephen Long is just a Satanist, like, in it, you know? Like, and yes, he's very thoughtful and he does a lot of writing, and I think that it's very eloquent. But, like, he doesn't think he's the king of Satanism. He doesn't think what he is doing is the one way to do it, which I think is something that should be noted.
Yeah, certainly. And that brings to Long is now introducing us to like yet another value of the word Satanism. I'm sorry, the word individualism, this idea of like individualism of body, of your bodily autonomy, of your right just to an identity that is not being encroached on by other people. And that, I assume, is one which we're all going to relate to much more strongly and maybe find a little bit more profound.
I think it's funny that you say, by the way, I think if I ever start a black metal band, I will call it King Satanist.
Yes, please.
Or King of the Satanists.
Yes.
Or Queen, in my case, of the Satanists.
No, it'd be better if it was King, because then people will get mad that you're taking the title and you're a woman.
Exactly, I will. I will. Like, honestly, with that sort of thing, I don't care. So, yeah, definitely King. But, and you're right, you did bring up a good point that Long is in Satanism. He practices Satanism, which is essential, which we're still counterculture, but he doesn't claim to be, Long doesn't claim to be the end all be all of that type of Satanism to practice. I think at that point, if you call yourself King Satanist, you're leading a cult.
Well, on that note, I should correct myself because I know somebody will take umbrage with this, that I called the Satanic Bible prescriptive a second ago. And actually, I do think it is to a degree because I don't think you could have a numbered list of sins and rules and call them sins and rules and not have that be prescriptive. I'm sorry. That's just what the words mean. At the same time, though, the idea with the Satanic Bible is that it's supposed to be descriptive. You read this book and it changes your life because you think, this is exactly how I've always felt, and this man has articulated in a way that I never could, which, woof, but okay. But what if I read somebody else's book about Satanism, and I have that same reaction instead? Now, all of a sudden, we have our contrary Satanisms, and you are promoting the one over the other. That is necessarily prescriptive. So, I get the idea. I just don't think it carries over. It doesn't. The theory does not survive contact with the reality, with experience outside the lab. Sorry, just doesn't work.
From Satanism is Self-Empowerment, Alexandra James, Homegirl Talk, 2018. I don't feel that I ever became a Satanist per se. I feel that my lived experience has shaped my attitudes. Ding, ding, ding. And a satanic philosophy encapsulates my own particular perspective. The appeal to me is that It is a religion and philosophy that places the highest value on the self, and as such, celebrates every manner of individual. As a Satanist, I believe that my power comes from within and is attained through my own actions and will. I take all responsibility for my actions. In Satanism, there is no scapegoat or idea that the devil made me do it. Quite the opposite. I believe both the triumphs and the ills of humanity are caused by individuals' actions themselves. The beauty is that there's many avenues for exploration within Satanism. There is no set doctrine or set of rules that must be followed. I have always felt that because humans are individuals, there is no one-size-fits-all religion or sets of rules for living. What works for one person might not work for another. Satanism attempts to transcend binary ways of thinking. There is no belief that you must conform to certain moral doctrines or commandments, or that others must be taught the one correct way of living. Otherwise, they will be spiritually punished. Overall, Satanism is an inclusive philosophy because at its nature, it celebrates the individual. I understand not everyone is going to like me, whether I am a Satanist or not. And I don't feel I should have to apologize or change certain aspects of myself to conform or please others' moral sensibilities. There are plenty of ways I was and am dragged down and insulted just by being a woman in the public sphere. If it is not witch or devil worshiper, it's being judged by my age, appearance, hair, body, etc. Unfortunately, these are the realities of living in a patriarchal society. So I may as well work it in a way that feels self-empowering to myself. In many ways, we're also playing with people's phobias of what a stereotypical Satanist looks like, or on a larger scale, what a woman looks like. Evil, wicked, in cohorts, with the devil, lustful, sinful, drinking blood, murdering babies. Tired narratives cast upon us by the patriarchal rule.
Woo! Fuck yeah.
I don't know, but we eat babies on Tuesdays. Totally.
Yeah. Delicious. Never. I can't even like, I don't like even thinking about food like veal or lamb. Like, I don't like even thinking about that. You think I could eat a baby? Come on.
Exactly. Once I found out what veal was made from, I was horrified at the times that I did have it.
It's like, oh, what have I done?
So just a note for listeners, if you want to hear more from Alexandra and from Zach, go back to our Twin Temple interview, episode 47. And Alexandra here again articulating, I think, probably our most palatable individualistic philosophy so far, which is individualism as a safe harbor from orthodoxy, as from the encroachment of patriarchy and heteronormativity and all of this sort of meddling, overbearing fascistic conservatism.
Yeah.
Yep. I think this is the closest, and she brings up the point that Satanism looks different to other people, and what works for one person might not work for another. I think that's, if I didn't say that before, that's what I was trying to say, essentially. Not only that, the point that she brings up that a woman is, in this case, I'm gonna take the quote, a woman is made to be kind of an outcast already and has historically. Now, of course, we take literally anything that is the other, whether it's someone that's queer, immigrant, person of color, someone that is not maybe or is disabled, not able-bodied enough, and things like that. Anyone that does not fit that is made as the other, is made as evil. And I think I've read a couple of books that talk about that narrative. Most recently, I read the most recent book by Grady Hendrix, and he talks about, Witchcraft for Wayward Girls. So just a little bit of a spoiler on that is, wayward girls are girls that were pregnant, and I think the setting was in the 1960s. So of course, back then, pregnant teens were a huge no-no, right? A huge taboo. And the book kind of goes into that a little bit. And I also saw his presentation about how women specifically, if they did anything that was remotely similar to what a man could or could not do, they were called witches.
Because, yeah, how could you even try to be like them? How could you? Let's put you in jail or burn you at the stake.
Just a note for further reading on this, people can check out Jules Michelet's Satanism and Witchcraft. Sylvia Warner's Lolly Willows is a great read. And Howard Becker's Outsiders. That's not the one you read in high school about Pony Boy fighting the Socias, although I guess that might actually have some perspectives on this as well. Different book, but still very good. Add those to the list if you've got a list.
Satanism's Pose of Individualism by Sam Blunt's Athwart, 2021. Mary Harrington recently wrote a lively and provocative piece on how Satanism has become the reigning ideology of the United States. This was daring work, since you naturally ratchet up the stakes in a debate by claiming, quote, "my opponent is siding with Satan." Harrington defines Satanism as pure, unfettered individualism or egoism, and sees it as the implicit and even in some cases explicit ideology of our time. She points to articles and publications like Salon, which suggests that Satanists are pretty cool, amounting to effective champions of liberalism. The pose of Satanism has been attractive for centuries. From exalted poets like Charles Baudelaire to the guys in Slayer, Satan comes to stand for the ultimate rebel, the person who cannot fit into the established order of things, who seeks to break it and remold it nearer to his heart's desire. This is an admittedly powerful and romantic point of view. It's not hard to understand why it has resonated throughout time. But funnily enough, Satanism does not seem to lead to a state where unique personalities are allowed to flourish. By the time Paradise Lost ends, Milton Satan is like Dante Satan, boring. He is a snake with nothing to say. It is similar to the pattern presented in Lewis's The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. The White Witch lures you in with the promise of Turkish delight and infinite pleasure, only to leave you frozen as a statue in her garden. Baudelaire embraces Satanism in a spirit of authentic romantic revolt, using a diabolic persona to express a universal sense of outrage at the oppressive weight of the universe. But Baudelaire's poetic persona are ambivalent creations more than half cautionary. A contemporary Satanist logging on to doom scroll or gaze at pornography is devoid of this rebellious aura. He or she is simply like every bored teen on planet Earth. Atomized satanic individualism is a sad and numb person, opening tabs in Google Chrome and then slamming the laptop shut when mom unexpectedly walks in the room. I remember attending a Unitarian Universalist church during a period of religious investigation. The congregation's guiding mantra was, quote, "God is whatever you want God to be." I reasoned to myself that if God was whatever I wanted God to be, then I would, in fact, be God. This struck me as absurd. What Harrington calls Satanism is this very tendency to deify one's own will, whim, or power of arbitrary choice. According to this ideology, what one wills does not actually matter. For obvious reasons, this is a recipe for unhappiness and insanity. As I have previously written, there is only one way to combat the hypercapitalism of consumption and commodification. Quote, you start by giving a gift. This is how all great saints and statesmen found their virtue. Wow, rude.
Quick note for anybody wondering, why aren't we reading Harrington's piece instead? Because she's a weird TERF and we're not going to put up with that around here. But... it does raise some potentially interesting points, albeit in kind of a snotty way, let's say.
And this is where I start to begin clashing with people, because how dare you? What if I want a doomscroll porn? That is my right to do so.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to say he's right or anything, but like, what the fuck is wrong with being boring sometimes? Just, it's okay.
Here, I think, is the hypothesis of this piece. If we accept Harrington's argument that the satanic philosophy of ultimate individualism has conquered America, and if we look at the state of America and find it dissatisfying, then that is a condemnation of individualism and Satanism. Problem number one, has it though? As a Satanist, I don't think that is my experience. I think you are just kind of conveniently defining Satanism as the thing you do not like, as people have always done.
It's interesting to me too, because it was 2021. Like, I'm thinking about when Roe got overturned, and a lot of people did like join TST. So I wonder if that is where that argument is coming from, that it's so hot, because there was a time that, you know, like TST was in the news all the time. It was really hot.
I can vouch for that. I can vouch for that uptick of Roe v. Wade, especially in Texas, where that's when the politicians here started to get real, real fucking comfortable with passing these draconian laws having to do with abortion. So that we definitely had an uptick then.
I would suggest that is really just sort of giving the lie to Harrington and Bunce here. If Satanism and individualism ruled America, how are we ending up with draconian anti-abortion laws? Doesn't really seem to make sense. The fact that there is a backlash to the encroachment of these religious powers on our rights does not show that we are dominant. It shows the opposite.
Right.
That's why it's a backlash. I also, this delves a little bit into this idea of self-deification. Again, that's just big, especially in the 60s Satanism circles. You know, we worship ourselves. Thyself is thy own God, as people like to say. They like to vow themselves. I never quite understood that impulse. And I've never identified with that. I say, I am not my own God. I don't have a God. That's why I'm a Satanist. Also, if I'm God, first of all, I probably wouldn't have to go around telling people that if I was God. I feel like I would probably just, I feel like I'd be secure enough in that I don't need to bring it up. But if I'm God, then what do I have to do with Satan? It feels like Satan's been cut out of the picture there. That feels less like Satanism and more like egoism. Now, at the same time, if other Satanists find that paradigm useful for them, okay, great. I'm not going to shit on it. Well, any more than I just did, sorry. But I don't want to shit on it is the point. But I still find it a little personally confused and confusing. And so if that is what is rubbing somebody like Bunce the wrong way here, good news. I don't care about that. I've got no, I don't truck with that one way or the other. So as you were, I suppose.
My interpretation of be your own God is similar to you, but in the fact that I need to put my needs first, especially when leading or being in a community, because a lot of the time we just get so, especially, you know, myself involved in TST, I got so deep into work and volunteering that I put my own needs aside. And it's really hard to find another similar word where you have to put yourself first and your needs first, whatever you need, without looking like an asshole. Because in a lot of the religions that we've come from, if you do something for yourself, that's selfish, right? You have to work for others. You have to do this charity work for others. I would argue you don't necessarily have to do it, because especially as, you know, we get older and I have that realization, I don't have as much energy anymore. Am I going to work? Am I going to put that energy to work so that I can get my rent paid and my bills paid? Or am I going to put that energy into trying to do things for others? I mean, it's the same thing, but I don't get monetary compensation for it, you know, and that's the unfortunate side effect of living in a capitalist society.
Yeah, it makes you wonder, like, you know, and this can be individually or as a group, like if you had your needs met, you know, how much of your time would you spend volunteering to help other people? You know, for me it would be a lot, but you know, I spend a lot of my time making sure my needs are met.
Yeah, the ultimate answer to that seems to be, sadly, we'll never know, because such is life.
It always feels like you're putting one fire out then another, because in my case, just to put my personal life out there for a little bit. I was doing really well for a while, but then life is like, you seem to be doing really well. Go fuck yourself.
Yeah, what's up with that? Why don't you stop doing that?
No, I was just going to say, and that's happened a couple of times recently too, where it's like, it seems like life is like, you're doing really well? No, you're not.
And that, I assume, is the siren's call of these apocalyptic religions that come and say, don't worry, we know how hard life is, but when it's all over, everything will be okay. Also, don't worry, someday the whole world will be over, but don't be alarmed about that. It's actually a good thing. It means all of these problems will cease to exist for everybody forever. And in the meantime, you can take solace, you know, basking in the presence of the Holy Spirit or, you know, what have you. By contrast, Satanism comes to us and says, no, it's kind of all on us. There is no other, there is no higher power to which we can appeal. The best we can do is appeal to others, either directly or abstractly. But even then, there's only so far you can go. It is going to come back to you sooner or later. And I'll be honest, that can be tough, but at the same time, I do sincerely think that it is a more authentic way to believe and that we are going to get further that way than by pretending it is not so.
Well, and hopefully that like motivates you, right? To do better and, you know, help shape the world into something that you see fit.
Absolutely.
I also
as an
like
individual.
Yeah. I also like that in one of the previous quotes, it did mention about taking personal responsibility for things. Because definitely in my upbringing, if I did something wrong or if I like rebelled or something, I was always told the devil made you do it. You have to accept Jesus as someone to lead you and guide you. But once I got out of it officially, which was pretty early on in my life, I accepted that, oh, I broke this. It wasn't the devil that made me do it. It was me, and I need to stop doing something, right? Not, for example, breaking or not getting along with someone or fighting or something. I think that's an important aspect that I've picked up is taking personal responsibility for things if I mess up. And I think others should be held accountable too.
Yeah, it cracks me up. There's this medieval monk, Rickomas, who would write that he chalked everything up to the devil. If he fell asleep during mass, or if he sang off key in the choir, or if he had an ache or a pain or an itch, he always thought that this was the devil trying to distract him from his holy duties. And when one monk ran off and gave up the monastic life and went out whoring, pardon the expression, sorry, you know, he would say that was the devil getting the better of that man too. And at some point in reading all this, I'm like, you know what you could stand to be possessed by, Rich? A little accountability one of these days is all I'm saying. So yes, individualism as personal accountability is also an interesting idea. And unfortunately, I think we're out of time, so we'll have to leave it hanging. But what, if anything, do we want to say wrapping this up? Do we think of ourselves as individualists? And when we say that, which, if any, of these definitions do we like?
I don't know. I feel like this is kind of a salad bar or a pasta bar, whatever delicious food you want, right?
Because Olive bar.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about those.
Because some of them are weird and not, I don't like them. but some of them I want to mix together.
Some of these are indeed the Kalamata olives of political philosophy. But what do you want?
Taking what fits to you is important, because some of those older philosophers, they may have some guidance or insight that you may not have thought of. But of course, I relate more towards the texts that are more recent, right? Except for that last one. That last one, I'm like, no. If I want to doom scroll, then that's on me. I take personal accountability for doom scrolling in my website of choice. So it's just, again, it boils down to that individual need, but we also align ourselves with, we just happen to align ourselves with a community of people. And in there, I think I would argue in those communities, I think I found people that have been some of my most trusted and closest friends. because we've kind of we're in this process of figuring out what is life, right? Because we're kind of dropped on this earth and we need to figure everything out ourselves.
Yeah, certainly. For my part, now that this is all said and done, I'll say that I think what I learned from this, particularly from the examples set by Alexandra and from Stephen Long, are that when I asked the question before, what is the difference between the individual and the society if the society is composed of individuals? And the conventional historical answer to that is, once again, you know, the state, the crown, God, all of these abstract ideas that are over and above us and so necessarily oppress us. But I think maybe today there is another answer, in that there is also this idea of convention and social mores and the version of society that exists in your head, the judgmental and intrusive vibe that you get off of other people, sometimes unintentionally, often intentionally, unfortunately, that can prey on your well-being and beat down your sense of self. And when we declare ourselves as individualists, perhaps something we are trying to do is declare our independence from that, because people are not just people. People are also their words and their actions take on a life of their own and a mind of their own. And this sort of invisible mass collective can be something that's very toxic for us. And so if we are promoting, I still like the word selfhood better, I'll probably continue to use that. But, you know, at the same time, why split hairs over terminology if the terminology is liberating for you?
Out of all of these, like, and this is not something new for me, but, you know, Alexandra's words really resonated the most, because I think individualism for me really has a lot to do with my, like, womanhood. And you're always, as a woman, trying to take back your personhood or whatever. You're always trying to claim who you are and all that kind of stuff, because it's constantly being... you're constantly being told that you're not the right shape, you're not the right this, you're not the right that. So when I think of individualism, that's where I really go. It's like, yeah, I'm me. I got big fucking calves and I'm loud and I'm funny.
Sitlali, thank you so much for joining us. If people want to look up you and your show and your work, where should they go?
You should go to Spotify. I started streaming there. And also my Substack, which I think it's under my name, Sitlali Suna. But if you look up Satanists Are People Too, you will find my podcast. And I've also written some things on there too. But thank you for having me.
And why don't you individually email us at blackmassappealpod@gmail.com. Or you can check out our website at blackmassappeal.com. And we're on most social medias at blackmassappeal.
To find out more about Satanic Bay Area, check us out at satanicbayarea.com. You can email us at satanicbayarea@gmail.com, especially if you've seen the contents of Jam and Darcy's fridge and would really like for us to know about it for some reason. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Blue Sky, and Threads at Satanic Bay Area. You can also follow us on Twitter. The handle there is @SatanicSF. And do we want a Hail Satan to go out on?
Hail Satan. And hail me.